This is an ABC podcast.
You can sort of tell they're up to something. They always say, we're bored, nothing to do. And that's the main thing they're missing out on. It's a storytelling from the elders. These are kids that we see every night walking till like, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning sometime, till the sun comes up.
We head out late at night in a community where they are trying to get the kids off the street, to get them back into school and reconnected to culture. And in the age of streaming TV services, we take a seat in a historic Outback open-air movie theatre.
It is a unique theatre, and sitting back in the canvas seats under the night sky with the glass coming across is doesn't happen everywhere.
We look at the not-for-profit model keeping these theatres open. I'm Alex Hyman and this is Australia Wide. Firstly tonight, a federal parliamentary committee has recommended new federal cultural heritage legislation to protect sacred sites across Australia. The parliamentary inquiry has been investigating the destruction of 46,000-year-old rock shelters in the Pilbara by mining giant Rio Tinto in May last year. The destruction of the Juukan Gorge site resulted in international outrage and led to the resignation of some senior Rio Tinto executives, including the company's global CEO. In its report, the Federal Parliamentary Committee said Rio Tinto demonstrated a profound lack of care for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander heritage in this country, describing the Juukan Gorge cave destruction as inexcusable and an affront, and the blast caused immeasurable cultural and spiritual loss and profound grief to traditional owners of the site. Pilbara reporter James Liveris has been following this story today. James, this is an extensive report from this federal parliamentary committee. What are its recommendations?
Yeah, so there were 8 recommendations made altogether from the report, but the key take-homes firstly was that the committee recommended that the Australian Parliament amend the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island Heritage Protection Act and the Environmental Protection and Biodiversity Act, basically changing it to make sure that the Minister for Indigenous Australians is responsible for all cultural heritage matters. The committee also found that the Australian government must legislate a new framework for cultural heritage protection at a national level, with the need to involve Aboriginal and Torres Strait people. So when that framework is formulated, the decision-making process ensures traditional owners and native title holders have a primary decision-making power in relation to that cultural heritage. It was also found that the inequalities and negotiation powers of Aboriginal people under the Native Title Act needs to be reviewed urgently. And lastly, I guess, which is really relevant with Juukan, is that the Australian government needed to increase the transparency and accountability requirements for prescribed body corporates and native title representative bodies, which basically means they would now have to show evidence of adequate consultation with local communities before carrying out any alterations to cultural heritage sites.
Well, let's hear from the committee chair and member for Leichhardt, Warren Ench, who had this to say about what occurred at Juukan Gorge last year.
There's no question that at the time, Rio totally disregarded the concerns of the PKK people, the traditional owners. It was all about accessing about $30 million worth of iron ore on that site. There's no question about that. And there was no consideration given to the grave consequences of it and the significance of it. And as I said in my foreword, actually, and in the report, I said this: while this was an absolute tragedy, I think what has come from this is a great, huge level of awareness, and right across the whole spectrum, not just from Rio, but from the entire mining industry.
That's Warren Ench. He is the committee chair for the Federal Parliamentary Committee investigating the destruction of the 46,000-year-old rock shelters in the Pilbara by mining giant Rio Tinto in May last year. They have handed down their final report, and Pilbara reporter James Liveris is talking us through the findings of this report. And what are some of those further findings or action points recommended within this final report, James?
Yeah, so they basically found three key points to focus on, and mainly that there needs to be an overarching Commonwealth legislative framework based on the protection of cultural heritage sites rather than its destruction. More broadly, federal, state, and territories all need to endorse a set of standards that basically draws the line in the sand for best practice in management of the cultural heritage sites. And lastly, there was also the need for economic benefits of protecting and celebrating cultural heritage sites should be promoted. So instead of just royalties being offered by mining companies that can often come at a cost of heritage, traditional owners should always have other options to consider for the economic benefit of their community. Now, whether that's employment, management, heritage training, ranger programs, that's later to be worked out.
And what has been the reaction from traditional owners to today's report?
Yeah, well, in response to the release of the report, the Puutu Kunti Kurrama Pinikara Aboriginal Corporation have declined to put a spokesperson forward. However, they have issued a written response and they thanked the committee for the work they have done, and they will now take time to consider the report and its recommendations. However, it is 18 months since the destruction and their people still hold a great sense of sorrow and loss. For the PKKP, though, actions, not words, will be the true test, they said. Their focus will therefore continue to be working in good faith with the leadership of Rio Tinto to ensure that the attitudes and processes which resulted in the Juukan Blast are truly replaced by genuine partnership and respect. And that will be achieved by more inclusion in the decision-making process.
And what has been the reaction from Rio Tinto to the release of today's report?
Yeah, so Rio Tinto welcomed the report, and the new chief executive, Jakob Stalsholm, said, "We have been working hard to rebuild trust and meaningful relationships with the PKK people and other traditional owners, and Rio Tinto is absolutely committed to listening, learning and showing greater care, and this remains a top priority." Mr. Stalsholm went further on to say that, "We know that this will take time and there will be challenges ahead, but we are focused on improving our engagement with Indigenous peoples and our host communities to better understand their priorities and concerns, minimise our impacts, and responsibly manage Indigenous cultural heritage in and around our operations."
James Liveris, our reporter there in the Pilbara in Karratha. Thanks so much for speaking to Australia Wide.
Thanks, Alex.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
That's right, you are on Australia Wide on this Monday. Thank you for joining me this evening. And you can also listen back to the program through the ABC Listen app or by visiting the Australia Wide website. Just search for Australia Wide Radio and ABC and you will get there. To the Kimberley now, where a community faces the challenge of getting children who spend their nights roaming the streets, often until dawn, back into school. In the town of Halls Creek, this is a critical situation where community leaders fear a generation of children could go without a proper education. However, an Indigenous-led social investment initiative believes it has the answer, but sustaining its success will be no easy feat. East Kimberley reporter Ted O'Connor reports from Halls Creek.
It's 10 o'clock on a weeknight in Halls Creek and large groups of children are roaming the streets. Every night a team of youth engagement workers try to stop them from causing havoc in the town's main precinct.
So we leave a couple of boys on the street and we just do around with a car. You can sort of tell they're up to something. You know, they're going to break in a house, they're going to steal a car, doing what they're doing. They come out and just run amok, sort of uncontrolled. We try to stop that from happening, just sort of quieten it down. Oh, they begin with a lot of mischief. Do some burning around the main office, around Shire, and whatever around town. They can get like crates, bins on the main highway, and there's a lot of traffic. Get road train coming through and ongoing. And they're there sort of just playing chicken, just standing up on the road, walking across the road really slow, taking their time.
That's Kevin Hunter Jr., who's been with All About Together from the beginning. While this is a school night, less than 35% of children in Halls Creek attend classes, and that rate has been falling. He says these children are losing more than an education, their whole sense of culture is at stake.
Well, the groups are walking up to those kids and we just come around with the vehicle and then Yeah, and pull them up, ask them what they're doing and all that. They always say, we bored, nothing to do. And that's the main thing they're missing out on. It's a storytelling from the elders. These are kids that we see every night walking till like, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning sometime, till the sun comes up. And then they, I don't know how they do it.
Tonight, Lorenzo Gordon is among those who are out on foot. He tries to build relationships with children, but forming these friendships while trying to stop teenagers from committing crimes isn't easy.
No, I don't walk around that much. I stay inside.
First time I see that.
But some of the kids there, a lot of these kids are actually smart. You can see some of them were a bit of fashion. There's a guy riding around with a little taxi, yeah? some of the kids are smart, and dream for the kids is just to make sure they pick up what we learn, you know, pick up what we are teaching them as night workers, youth workers, and, you know, like it's pretty hard. It's going to be a long road.
When day breaks, work from the night before continues. Youth officers visit the parents and guardians of children who are out on the streets until the early hours. All the Buds founder and cultural advisor Dean Mosquito says the town's rich Indigenous culture means the people who work on his team have strong connections to families doing it tough in the community.
It's not right for their kids out on the street, but I think we need to support the parents a bit more, you know. Like, because the more support they get from us, the more better, you know. Like, give their kids and help them do their yard or things like that, you know, like all them simple little things, you know, like even put food on the table for them. More like connected, you know, like if we connected somewhere, you know, like in Aboriginal way, you know, like most people are all connected, like even Gidja and Jerry, you know. Like.
But getting these children back in school remains a challenge. So in July, All Abud started running a Certificate 2 cultural bridging course. Of the dozen children involved, more than half have since attended some classes at school.
Okay, so you're covered in boomerang, you know that?
Oh, they're really enjoying it. One of the highlight moments was seeing one of the kids make their first boomerang. He was that excited, he took it home. He blitzed it in the first session. Getting back out in the bush, connecting back to country in that sense, as well as making artifacts, getting in touch with culture and their language. It gives them a sense of pride, I guess, an identity, knowing their culture. There isn't many of our elders left who are quite able to share the knowledge and pass it down, and the next generation is sort of a bit disengaged from it. A lot of challenges that they find are a lot of them are drinking at a young age, smoking.
15-year-old Arthur Malay says the cultural sessions make him want to return to school.
Like going out bush, swimming, making boomerang and spear. My favourite part is making some cool stuff, being a role model for all the younger kids.
The program began after youth crime reached crisis point 3 years ago. In the months after the night patrol started in 2019, the youth crime rate dropped sharply, but has since plateaued.
It'll be a long road, as long as we just, well, main thing is day by day, you know, like, because like some kids will take longer to realize what they really got and haven't got, you know, like, because like our kids, they're more like, bit like just, you know, like if we can get more, they get them more comfortable and more trust with them, you know.
The $3 million a year program has won plaudits for tackling a problem felt across the Kimberley. But different parts of the initiative are funded on an ad hoc basis with no long-term certainty. All Abud's founder wants governments to back his Indigenous-led team for the long run.
Especially when you're doing something like if they tell you to do something in 6 months, it's real hard to do something in 6 months, you know, like because we're trying to get all the people together, like doing it our way, you know, like you say they've been doing it for the last 30 years, you know, their way, you know, like time to turn the table so we can do it our way, because the, you know, we started it our way, you know, like, and it dropped the crime rate.
That's Dean Mosquito there, ending that story from East Kimberley reporter Ted O'Connor. He was in Halls Creek.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
And right now you're with me, Alex Hyman. Remember, you can always email us. We'd love to hear what is happening in your part of the world. australiawide.radio@abc.net.au. That's australiawide.radio@abc.net.au. To Queensland now. As the rise in streaming services challenges the survival of cinemas across the country, movie theatres in remote and regional areas are facing an even tougher hill to climb. In Western Queensland, Outback cinemas are keeping the doors open and popcorn flowing with the not-for-profit model. But their success comes down to the troops of volunteers making sure the show goes on, as Longreach reporter Danielle O'Neill found out.
The Wirral Theatre has been run continuously by the Ebert family for over 55 years.
For a little girl growing up in her father's open-air theatre in Winton, Geraldine Cogland learned early on it takes resilience to make sure the show can go on.
He took over in 1965 after his father passed away, and then I was a 66 baby, so I've grown up literally my whole life with the theatre at our back door.
One of 10 siblings, the children corralled crowds and kept the candy bar immaculately stocked during the Royal Theatre's heyday. Over the years, Geraldine's family watched the cinema be destroyed by fire, rebuilt, used as a roller skating rink, then cafe, and become largely unused as the cinema business became commercially unviable. Now, she's part of a group of volunteers working to refurbish the cinema to its former glory.
We formed a not-for-profit 3 years ago called Winton Movies Incorporated, which was founded on a couple of local community members really wanting to see the theatre still operating.
The group conducted extensive renovations this year, created a museum with memorabilia, and are running regular programming.
We're showing 3 nights a week. So Wednesday night is our nostalgia night, which is a bit of a yesteryear experience. So we begin with a narration on the history of the theatre itself, which is Australia's second oldest open-air theatre, through then to classic advertising slides, newsreels, cartoons, and then black and white content. Friday night's our feature film night, so we try and bring a more later release for the local community, and then Sunday we have a classic movie night. We've been currently running John Wayne, so he's very popular.
Cinema goers come for the experience.
They really want the experience of the theatre, probably 90% experience to 10% content. It is a unique theatre, and sitting back in the canvas seats under the night sky with the glass coming across is doesn't happen everywhere. So that supporting something as historical that it is, and also theatres are a big part of people's lives, or have been a big part of people's lives over the earlier generations. So it's nostalgic.
Volunteers say they are happy to see the building being used.
Feels good, because it was literally just empty for a fair while there. First time I'd actually seen the back out here was when I started volunteering. It was really rewarding, and we get to see the look on everyone's face when they walk in, and just complete gobsmack of that there's this little bit of paradise out here.
In the town of Barcaldine, 3 hours southwest of Winton, the historic Picture House was reopened as a not-for-profit in 1995. Trevor Howie is among more than 20 volunteers who organise content and run the program.
Normally there's three of us on a film night, two in the canteen and myself up in the projection room.
He says the key to success for a not-for-profit cinema is passionate volunteers.
You have to have that drive, and we have a core team within the Arts Council there. Brett Walsh, who was the one who built this back up in 95, Oz and Raylene, who organise us all and get us all going, get the films in here. So you have to have that impetus and drive, really, and from the Arts Council have an impetus and drive from them to have something like this to happen. So really it comes down to the people within the community, and if you've got someone with that love of films or love of theatre to get it going, you know, and keep it going. And obviously it's been successful here because we've been doing it now for 26 years as a volunteer.
Winton Cinema closes for the summer this weekend before its planned reopening in March. But the sweltering outback summer won't be a break for the volunteers, who have a long list of restorations and upgrades to complete.
We're all motivated with one vision, and that is to set this facility up for the next 50 years and hand it to the next generation. And even within our own family network, the next generation are on board. So it's bright.
It's wonderful they can keep it going. That was Geraldine Coghlan from the Winton Royal Theatre speaking with Longreach reporter Danielle O'Neill.
ABC Australia Wide.
The pilot will dump fuel and then light the afterburners, and it just shoots out a massive flame of lit up jet fuel. Yeah, it's a party trick.
On ABC Radio.
And finally tonight, plenty of people work out and exercise, but are they farm strong? That was something that was asked at WA's first Active Farmer Games, an event held near Albany over the weekend. 150 farmers from across the state made the trip to flip tyres, climb hay bales and run across the custom-built obstacle course. Albany reporter Angus McIntosh headed along and caught up with event organiser Boyd Ray.
Team number one, make your way over to the starting line. Come on! Active farmers, WA, let's kick it off, ladies and gentlemen. Crank some music, Regan Pontillo, and let's get this going.
I've seen people from 6 years old up till 65, 67 years old from all over the Great Southern that regularly come to Active Farmers sessions, that regularly get involved, that all call me up and ask if there's anything they can do to help out. Great community-minded people, and to take time out of their whole weekend to come here and kick some butt over the moon.
You've got a bit of a log jam.
Yeah.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah.
5 minutes, we'll have a stubby, I'll be all right.
So Active Farmers originally started in 2015 with Ginny Stevens over in Tasmania, actually. And it was just a community-minded person that wanted to do something for their community, and they started up a group training session, which is nothing new in rural communities. But what happens usually during harvester seeding is those sessions die off and then people don't start it up again. Active Farmers is a non-for-profit organisation that then pays the trainers when those periods are low, numbers are low, to keep them going, to maintain exercise sessions in rural towns that don't have access to facilities such as gyms. And it's just a great movement to get people in rural areas thinking about their health again.
We all work out together, so we're a bit of a family. So there's quite a few of us here today getting through it together, so that was so much fun. The water slide into the dam and then pulling ourselves across the rope, wading through the mud. Oh! I was a bit scared about the whole yabbies in the dam thing, but it was really, really good. I overcome that fear and pushed through it. And yeah, it was great. It was a great day out.
Great work, mate. Well done. Well done, guys.
It was really fun. It was good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was your favourite obstacle?
Into, like, the water, like the slide. Yeah.
So, you're looking a bit muddy there. Did you have much luck getting through the dams?
Yeah, not too bad. I didn't want to get my hair wet.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty elite, so I didn't stack it at all. It was only just wet through. Just through the dam, getting a bit wet through there, and then just picked up a bit of dust as we were catching up with the other teams and overtaking them. Threw up a bit of dust there, so, yeah.
How did you find out about this event?
Well, my parents do the Active Farmers Weekly, and I'm boarding, so I've done a few, but it was really nice to do it with them.
Are you a farming family?
Yeah, we are. We're from Tambwa, which is in the Great Southern. No, I'm from Broomhill.
And farming?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel about it? Are you going to be coming back next year?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, it was a really good experience. I really enjoyed it.
Good to see such a big turnout, doing something active and fun with everyone in the community, getting to meet some of the local farmers and from the surrounding areas as well. So, yeah, it was great. Thanks to Boyd. It was so much fun, well organised. Can't wait to do it again next year.
It was really good, such an adrenaline rush. I didn't think it was going to be this hard, but it was super fun and a great turnout today. So, yeah, I had heaps of fun. Water obstacles were the funnest, like going through the dams and stuff. They were really challenging, but like heaps of fun. We had a bit of trouble going up the hills. That was really hard, and some of the tyre obstacles, but we all waited for one another. I mean, there were points where I was absolutely dying, but everyone waited for each other and we got through it together. It was so much fun.
Active Farmers, this event was going to be a national event. Obviously, the borders are a little bit difficult, but next year, I'm looking forward to doing this again and being full open borders. See how we go. Bring them all in and we'll show those Easterners how it is. Sound good?
That's the Active Farmer Games event organiser Boyd Ray ending that story from Angus McIntosh and Tom Edwards. With plans to take it national, it will be great to see that happening. You also heard from some of the competitors, including Giselle Paganoni, Lisbeth Cunningham, Daisy Flugie and Samantha Dunnett. And that is Australia Wide for this Monday. I hope you're inspired to get out and get active this evening. I hope you can catch me tomorrow. Looking forward to your company then. I'm Alex Simon. Have a great evening. Cheerio.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.